I'd like to acknowledge Australia's First Nation people as the traditional custodians of the land, and for this episode in particular, the Peramang and Kaurna people. I pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging.
I think it takes a really brave or courageous individual to go, I know there's something here, but we haven't realised it yet. We just need fresh eyes, a fresh way of looking at things to see if we can tease out something else.
This is Over a Glass. I'm Shantae Whale. Kate Goodman is one talented operator. Named Winemaker of the Year twice over, her love for the grape is demonstrated by her creativity, dedication and sheer mastery of winemaking at Penley Estate in Coonawarra. In the midst of a very busy time, she's joining me today on the podcast. Hi, Kate. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure to be here, Shantae. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to talk to you because when I first tasted your wines, it was a couple of vintages ago for the first time, I remember thinking, who has created these? Like, I need to meet this person. I need to talk to them and pick their brains. And it's taken a couple of years, but I finally got you.
Excellent. I look forward to our conversation.
Now, you grew up on the South Coast. Whereabouts in New South Wales did you grow up?
So I grew up in the Shoalhaven region, so not far from Jervis Bay. So a coastal girl, definitely not a wine region.
Not so much, but such a beautiful part of the world. I'm in Helensburg, but I grew up in Ostermere, and I love the South Coast, the entirety of it. It's just a beautiful part of the world.
Yeah, it sure is.
And do you remember the first moment that you were ever kind of conscious of wine? Was your parents big drinkers of wine? When did that kind of first come across your path?
When I was younger, my mum's, if she listens to this, she's going to hate this, but I remember cask wine being in the fridge, and I remember the upgrade from the 4 litre to the 2 litre. But they weren't wine connoisseurs. They had glasses of wine with meals, but we weren't what I would call a big wine family.
That's probably pretty kind of common in that kind of era, wasn't it? My father drank cask wine, and I agree. I remember going from the 4 litres up to the two-litre Yulumbers, and still I enjoyed a glass or two, that's for sure.
Guilty as charged. They're probably my, you know, first wine memories amongst a few other sort of weird wine products. You know, I can remember camping trips and the cask wine would always be packed. And that was just, you know, part of they're part of my childhood memories. Not bottled wine, but, you know, that sort of more consumer friendly, easy access, just part of Australian life.
And especially with something like camping, I mean, the perfect kind of packaging to take camping is a big, soft, you know, bag in a box. So it makes complete sense.
It totally makes sense. And I wish current uptake was greater with the whole bag in box profile. It does make sense. It doesn't necessarily mean bad wine. In fact, Penley tried to do it quite a few years ago, and it was all just too hard, to be honest. But it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, there are some good guys forging forward with it. So let's just hope that we can only support and see how it goes. But I agree with you. I hope it gets taken up too. Now, you studied biomedical science. Tell me a little bit about how wine wove its way into your career path.
Oh, gosh. So I originally had visions of being an architect. I grew up with a father who's a draftsman, and I spent hours, you know, drawing house plans in his office, and I really wanted to be an architect, but I don't think I spent enough time studying to get into that course. And I ended up studying biomedical science with visions of saving the planet with great microbiology discoveries. You know, this is, you know, 35 years ago when environmental science was a relatively new-ish thing. And I, you know, to be quite honest, as much as I loved learning about microbiology and, you know, fermentation and mycology and all sorts of crazy medical stuff, I quickly realized that being inside a laboratory was not going to push the right buttons for me in my future. And then I started looking, you know, at some of the elective courses that I could do. And there was a bit, you know, some food tech where I first learnt, you know, about cheese and how they made dehydrated yeast and brewing and winemaking. And it's like, oh, these things sound fun. And I did finish my biomed degree. And I actually joke to people now that, you know, I studied fermentation before fermentation was cool. And I learned about mushrooms before everybody was into mushrooms. But I went and got a job in a winery for vintage. And I think I was just hooked. I loved it. I loved the idea of being physical, of making things, of, you know, being outside but being inside. The adrenaline of harvest, and I never look back. That's it. Hooked.
That certainly sounds a little bit more exciting, a little bit more hands-on, that's for sure. Your first vintage was at the Mecca at Wirra Wirra. Tell me a little bit about that first vintage.
Oh, so, you know, I drove from New South Wales across the country into the great unknown, and to be, you know, I really didn't know anything about the wine industry. Totally green. And I worked for Ben Riggs was there, Steve Pannell was the assistant winemaker. I did a mixture of lab work and cellar stuff and grape sampling. So I was always out in the vineyards walking around and then, you know, processing them to see what they look like and then seeing them through fermentation. It was, you know, a much smaller enterprise than it is now. Greg Trott was still alive. It was a really fun, you know, we worked hard. We probably played hard. But it was, it, you know, it certainly, you know, embedded itself in my heart as an industry that I wanted to be involved in going forward.
Wow, some amazing mentors and people to learn from. After you decided, yep, this is definitely what I want to do, and you had that vintage experience, you then went to the Clare Valley, so a little bit more remote. What was your experience out in the Clare?
So up in the Clare, I went to work with, I actually followed Steve Pannell up to there, and we were working at Tim Napstein, and different, you know, a different range of varieties, I guess. You know, obviously a lot more Riesling, cooler than McLaren Vale, smaller. It was a smaller winery. It was, you know, it was just more another experience. And by that time, I was also studying winemaking at Charles Sturt University by distance education. So it was just that, you know, growing. I understood more of the winemaking process. So you start to ask more questions and think about things more and, you know, gaining more knowledge, seeing more vineyards. Yeah, it's just that, you know, the small building blocks, learning your apprenticeship, working with really great people.
Makes all the difference, doesn't it? In terms of, I haven't actually met someone that studied, you know, via long distance. Did you find that difficult considering, you know, you didn't have, as you know, other colleagues around and students around to kind of bounce ideas off? Was that difficult, did you find?
So when you study by distance education at CSU, you do go to what they call residential schools. So all the people studying from all across the country would all descend into the university's campus in Wagga, and we'd all get together and spend a couple of weeks and tell stories and, you know, swap phone numbers. So was it, I don't know, I'd already been at university, I guess. It was hard to sort of make time for the study perhaps, but I didn't necessarily miss the, you know, going to classes so much every day. And the harsh reality was that there's no way I could have afforded to do it full time because I'd already done one degree. I needed to be working.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, God. I mean, I can't imagine. The fees that I look at people with their degrees to get makes my eyes water. But that's good to know that because, you know, that is so much about, and like you said, you'd already done a degree, so you knew what uni was all about. But that is a huge part about meeting people and going on the journey with them. What happened after the Clare? Tell me about how you found your way to Sepults in the Grampians. I feel like this place is a little bit like Hogwarts or something, like it's a school for the gifted, you know what I mean? Because the people that have gone through Sepult is remarkable.
Oh, that's a great description of it. So that was my first winemaking job, I guess. So all of the others had been, I guess, junior, cellar hands, lab roles, whatever. So I started at Sepults in Great Western as an assistant winemaker, worked my way up to, winemaker over the time that I was there. It was under the South Corp banner. So it was a corporate wine company through the 90s. And let me tell you, it was such a wonderful experience. The people I got to work with, the people I got to taste around a table with was amazing. You got to see wines from across the country. You got to have amazing training. It was a really great foundation for the future. I got to work with incredible fruit, sparkling wine, table wine, incredible old Shiraz vineyards in Great Western, Riesling and Chardonnay out of Drumborg, sparkling grapes from across the country. It really was. I had a really great time and I learnt an incredible amount and worked with really good people.
That's awesome to hear. I've heard from a few winemakers now that do say when you have your first role, go big, go into a kind of larger corporate operation and then go small after that, just because of the sheer ability to use their resources and have access, like you said, to different fruit from around the countries. And you had kind of the best of both worlds, I suppose, because you had some smaller experiences, but then you got to just see, you know, how a big winery operates and just what it takes to kind of work on that level.
Of course. So you learn, not only do you learn winemaking skills and taste around the bench with incredible palates, you learn how to manage people. You learn logistics. You learn management skills. Like the list of things that I had training on and experience with compared to, you know, going to a small winery as an assistant winemaker, maybe doing, you know, 300 tons is like, it's just a chalk and cheese experience. And even to young winemakers now, I would certainly say, yes, go, you will learn a lot. But remember the 90s, you know, it was a bit of the glory days. Australian wine was on a high and everyone was flushed with funds and, you know, nothing was out of reach. But if you put through a sensible proposal, more often than not, you got it over the line. It was terrific.
Gosh, I hope that that is coming back around. We can only pray, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't excessive, but it was, there was certainly lots of opportunities.
Yeah, and lots of demand.
Yeah.
And then after your time at Sepult, you gathered all that information. You then took your first chief winemaker role at Punt Road in the Yarra Valley. And then you stayed there for 13 years. So you must have enjoyed it. Tell me a little bit about the Yarra Valley and also just kind of what it's like to step into a chief winemaker role.
Well, it was pretty daunting. It was the first vintage for Punt Road, so there was wet concrete when I started, as in it was, you know, of course it was just in a bit of just in time, the brand itself didn't exist, but there were established vineyards with that operation. It also did quite a bit of contract winemaking, so the owners of the business had set a whole lot of stuff up. That first vintage at that winery is perhaps the hardest I have ever done because of a number of factors. It was a big season. I didn't know the vineyards. There was no style direction. It was all new. Incredible responsibility. But that aside, I stayed for a long time because the Yarra Valley in Victoria is, it's a really beautiful place. There are incredible vineyards. The wines that come out of there are amazing. I really loved what I was doing at Punt Road.
It's so nice to hear. I mean, I love the Yarra. I love the wines that come out of there, the styles, the different expressions, but also its location's so hard to beat as well because you do have the city at your fingertips as well. So it's in a very sweet little spot, isn't it?
Oh, you've got that nailed. It is, yes, it is definitely, that dream where you live in the country. Or you could live in the city if you chose to, but I lived in the heart of the Yarra in Healesville. But you could duck into the heart of Melbourne to go for dinner, to do something artistic, go and see a live band, and it's all just there. But then you can also go back to the expanse of the countryside. Yeah, it was hard to leave. It's amazing.
Well, you took on more than just Punt Road. You also established your own label in 2012, Goodman Wines. Did you ever make, do you remember any major mistakes or challenges that you had when you had your name to the label? What was that like?
Having your own wine label, and starting out, it was amazing. It was great to actually, touch every grape and make your wines is such a satisfying process. And I had a young son at the time. Levi was born in 2010, so he was little. But I would suggest that my personality is not a great sales personality. So I found that aspect of the business, of having my own wine business, the hardest. It's like the making of it was the easier bit, but the selling, the selling was the hardest. And, talking yourself up and talking your wines up and getting them in front of people, it's just not... It's not where my personality naturally travels to. So for me, that was the hardest bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that because I think, you made all the wines, all the details, you're the perfect person to speak on behalf of them. But maybe it's just, it depends on the personality. But I can imagine, trying to tell somebody why a wine is so beautiful and how you managed it without big noting yourself, or it would just feel awkward. So it's much better to either let somebody else do that or, like you said, to make wine for somebody else.
I still miss it and I may be dabbling again at the moment, but there is an incredible amount of joy and pride beyond working for somebody else when you do your own. And that's not suggesting that you don't go all out for somebody else. It's like the buck really does stop with you when it's yours, sort of thing. I don't know. It's different. And especially once I had my own winery, because I leased a winery for quite a number of years, and that was another step altogether. That was awesome. That was great.
A big space and, I suppose like a blank canvas, you just do have this ability to craft something that's totally unique. And yeah, I mean, I think that that's, and then you had some great little collaborations with some other winemakers there too, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah, I did. I worked with, with a couple of, I shared the space with Caroline Mooney, who has Bird on a Wire in the Yarra Valley, and she's still doing that. And we made wine for a couple of other Yarra Valley producers, but tended to be more premium. You know, I made the wines for Ronnie D'Estasio for a really long time at Punt Road, and then he moved to our new Yarra Valley Artisan Winemakers space. So, you know, you do forge great relationships with people and characters over time.
Talking of good relationships, in 2015, you were approached by your boss, and I believe the creative brief was do whatever you like, so long as it's not what has been done in the past. First of all, who says that ever, and what kind of dream boss is that?
That was the vision of Ang Tolley, one of the owners of Penley Estate. And I think it takes a really brave or courageous individual to go, I know there's something here, but we haven't realised it yet. We just need fresh eyes, a fresh way of looking at things to see if we can tease out something else. So that's, it's a pretty cool thing. And I don't think anyone else has ever said to me, you know, experiment to the point of failure, you know, push as hard as you can. And if it doesn't work, don't worry about it. We'll try again next year. It is amazing, isn't it? What a luxury. I mean, what a gift.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. It's somebody just handing something over to you. I mean, I love that idea, but I think about putting myself in your shoes. How do you go about doing that? So you've come from the Yarra, you're now in Coonawarra, you've got this amazing label, but it is taking a new path. Where do you start, and how do you go about doing something no one's ever done before? How do you, where do you start?
Oh, it's pretty hard. I remember walking into the vineyard the first time, having tasted the wines that were already in existence, and going, these two things don't correlate. I'm not seeing the vineyard in the wines, or the quality of the fruit is so much better than I was expecting. All right, this is exciting. And it was almost like I had to, you know, put blinkers on, head down, and try and ignore what everybody else around me was doing, and I guess just be guided intuitively to what the vineyard could give. I don't think we experimented all that hard the first year. It was a bit of a, you know, let's just see what we can do. But then the first little step outside the normal lane was making an early release Cabernet Franc from grapes that had been made in a much more traditional manner to go into a full-bodied red wine. Instead, it was like, oh, let's make it like Pinot. Let's make it like those Cab Francs that come out of the south of France that are released and they're unoaked and they're delicious. Let's just try it. And it worked, and it was delicious, and it worked so well in the market that it went from being what we called a project wine or an experimental wine to being a core range, and now goes around the world. So it was just that whole, what can the vineyard do? Oh, okay, what have I learnt from making Pinot Noir in the Yarra Valley? Let's use some whole bunches. Let's be gentle. Let's not put it into barrels. Let's not extract all the tannin. So it was just about, you know, you just got to be open to possibilities and let your mind wander into what I call the grey areas, you know, where, you know, anything can happen. We don't just have to make big red Cabernet. We can, you know, or big sort of medium to heavy bodied traditional Cabernet. Let's see what else we can do.
I love that. And I think gosh, it must have been a relief for you when you went into and looked at the fruit and thought, this is great fruit, because if you went the other way and went, God, this fruit's awful, you'd think you'd have to be a bit of a magician to pull a rabbit out of the hat. But what was the response from the community? I'd love to know, because Coonawarra is pretty, you know, it's pretty, you know, tight-knit and lots of well-established relationships. When you kind of released that first Cabernet Franc, what were your peers' thoughts?
I think there was a lot of curiosity. There was a bit of a, what the hell's going on up the road? There was, you know, there was cautious interest perhaps, but maybe not so much early on. It was only, you know, it took a few years for, you know, a bit of conversation to start happening about the things that were happening, because we weren't only making, I guess, more contemporary wines. We were still making serious Cabernet, and that's still very, a very important part of Penley, is making good quality serious Cabernet, but we're also sort of trialling all these other things. And, you know, now when you look at what's going on down in Coonawarra, which is a pretty traditional region, there are people trialling different bits and pieces. There are some, you know, it's not all just old man red wine. Oh, I shouldn't have said old man. You know, it's not just that traditional Cabernet that's coming out of that region. I think there is a bit more of an open view of what is possible.
I agree with you. And I, as somebody who's always loved the Coonawarra, I'm really relieved to know that there are some recipes and some wine brands that haven't changed much and are still doing something that really works for them. And then you've got, you know, really exciting, bit more challenging, you know, bit more experimental stuff too. It's got everything now. And I agree with you. I think that, you know, Coonawarra knows what it does well, because it has wonderful sites and beautiful old vines, but there is room for all the expressions out there. And it's never been more of an exciting time for Coonawarra, I don't think.
I think Coonawarra going forward is in a really great place. It's a cool region. Our seasons are getting hotter, which, you know, for many regions in our country, that is not necessarily a positive thing. Maybe it's going to work in that region's favour. I think, no?
Yeah, I think so. I think, I mean, yeah, an incredible place, a beautiful place to visit, and just, you know, too many cellar doors to want to check out. But I'm thrilled where Coonawarra is at the moment. And, I mean, you can still get a $20 absolutely superb Cabernet that will age for 10, 15, 20 years at $20. Like, it's insane. It's absolutely insane.
I do wonder, if we were an hour from Melbourne, though, I don't think it would be that way. It would be taken a bit more, it would be taken, I don't know, more seriously. Not more seriously, that's not the right word, but.
It'd be trendy if it was near Melbourne. Everybody would be drinking it.
Yeah, and everyone would be dabbling in it. It is, I feel, at the moment, a region that doesn't get the kudos it really does deserve. And there are people that kick the boots into Coonawarra that have actually never been there, or you'll ask them, when was the last time you had a wine from Coonawarra, and they'll go, oh, don't drink them. It's like, well, you can't kick the boots into something that you don't actually, that you're not familiar with. And it is something that really does frustrate and infuriate me, that attitude to, one, the region, but also to Cabernet Sauvignon, the great variety that does come out of that region, is, you know, is the boot kicking that it gets from so many people, when it can be more than full-bodied red wine if you let it. You know, we've all got multiple personalities. Cabernet's no different.
It's so true, and it also has such a interesting timeline in its life, and that's why I love it. I mean, you know, they drink beautifully young and all that kind of wealth of black fruit. And then, you know, and with 5-8 years of age, they change. And then goodness knows in 20-30 years, they are a completely different beast. They're enjoyable equally at all of those stages. So I want Coonawarra region to do well. I want people to drink Cabernet, but there's a selfish part of me that wants to kind of keep the secret, you know.
No, more people need to understand that the tannin profile of Cabernet makes it just such an incredible food wine. And I wish more people would give it a go, you know. I really do.
Well, with the amazing wine coming out of Penley Estate, I can't see why they wouldn't. What is Cabernet your favourite variety to play with? Is there a variety that you're working with at the moment that you really are finding lots of joy in?
Oh, that's like saying I've only got one child, but I'd imagine that's like saying which one's your favourite child. And
At the moment.
I mean, Cabernet has been such a focus for me over the last 7 years, pushing and poking it in all directions just to, like, really test it. It has certainly tested my patience, my brain, your stamina. It's tested everything, and I feel like I have learnt so much more about that variety and perhaps have a lot more or have – respect for it, because of course I used to make Cabernet under my own label when I was in the Yarra, so I've been working with this variety for a long time. Penley has been buying some Grenache from a vineyard in McLaren Vale that was planted in 1915, and I have to say that the beauty that can be found in Grenache off majestic old vines is pretty mesmerizing. It may have sort of, you know, it's finding very much a place, but I do love Cabernet.
At your heart. You answered that very well, and thank you for that. I appreciate it. Now, when you're not drinking your own wines, is there another of your kind of colleagues' wines that you'd like to shout out that you really, you know, support year in year out? Only one though, because I know that you have a lot of friends with great wine.
Oh my gosh, how can I only choose one? The phone will ring as soon as I, you know, hang up. That people are like, why didn't you pick mine? I do believe variety is the spice of life, and I do taste and drink wine from all over the world, but certainly all over the country. And I'll sort of say, you know, we could all fill our cupboards with Champagne and Burgundy and Barolo and German Riesling, but this country is producing absolutely world-class wine. So, you know, as much as I am currently in love with a variety called Timorasso, what about, the beautiful wines that Sam Conyeu is making down at Stargazer in Tassie? Terrific.
Very good call. She is making fabulous wines and an amazing individual to boot. And Timorasso, cool variety, really enjoy it. Not a lot out there, but what a fleshy, fun, savoury, cool white wine.
It's so random that I remember being at lunch, it's probably 2.5, maybe even 3 years ago, and quite often when you're at lunch, you know, wine just gets poured, you have a sip, you keep talking, whatever, don't really pay that much attention, and I had this glass of wine poured for me, and, you know, not too often do you get completely stopped in your tracks with a whole lot of, what is this? Wow, I've not smelt something like this before, and it was an Italian. It was at the Timorasso from Vietti, and it was just mesmerizing. It was beautiful. So, you know, I don't drink lots of it, but I am just a little bit fascinated with that very, very, with that variety, and there's very little of it in the world. So it's a pretty random little thing that just popped into my head then.
No, I like it a lot. And I've seen a couple of, at some wine shows in the last year, and I thought I was really like, yeah, somebody bought Timorasso. I'm thrilled to see it. Now, I feel like I'm just pushing you up against a wall and asking you all these tricky questions. But one last question is, today, if you could only have three drinks for the rest of your life and you had to decide today, what would they be and why?
Only three.
Let's say alcoholic drinks, because we know that coffee and water and tea and things like that would absolutely have to be in there.
I'm going to start with tequila, top-end tequila. I know everyone drinks gin and tonics. However, I really enjoy tequila with like a salted grapefruit. That the Strange Love, salted pink grapefruit and tequila, ice. So a Paloma, I guess, is sort of what that is. Love it. I find it so refreshing and, you know, that's my go-to mixer, I guess. So there's one. I would have to have Chardonnay on that list. I think Chardonnay is such a terrific and expressive variety, a variety that expresses both its place but also its maker, and I really find that quite interesting that both of those personalities can come through. And on my current journey, I'm going to say Grenache. You know, I've relocated over to, and I live over in South Australia, and I have fallen for Grenache. So I'm going to pop that in my list. And it can be so many things. It can be, you know, that sort of really textural style that you can get out of Yangara. It can be wines with great personality. You know, Thistledown, they make a number of really interesting Grenaches. Or, Sierra Reid, who makes Grenache out of the Barossa, I think her wines really, you don't just see the variety, you actually see her soul in those wines. And I like a variety like Grenache that can really tell those stories, I guess, of the who, the what, and the how.
I love that. That's beautifully answered. Thank you so much. Well, I agree with you. Variety is the spice of life. I think my three wines would change on a daily basis, and that's the blessing we have of being able to drink what we want, when we want, and with whatever amazing food that we have. But it's been such an honour chatting to you, Kate. You do an amazing job. I don't need to tell you that. But keep on keeping on. And thank you very much to the Tollies for giving you the opportunity to express yourself. So thank you again for your time. Best of luck with Vintage and everything that's happening in your world. And I hope we get to have a glass of something soon, perhaps a nice glass of Cabernet sometime.
I would love that. Let's wait till the weather cools down, and then that's certainly Cabernet would probably replace Chardonnay.
I love it. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
This is Over a Glass. I'm Shantae Whale. Stay tuned for more stories from the world of wine and drinks. Listen in every Thursday on your podcast app. Follow us on Instagram at Over a Glass Pod. And contact us at overaglass@deepintheweeds.com.au.